All right, show of hands. How many of you made at least one New Year's resolution? Wow, you guys are a bunch of unambitious folks. Because like first hour, and usually I think they're like the sleepy ones, like almost everybody raised their hand. But wow, okay, so some made resolutions, all right? Well, this morning we're going to talk about, so you still have a chance, all right? You still have a chance to get in on the resolution bandwagon. It's not too late. Maybe you didn't raise your hand because you've already made one and broken it already, all right? We're not going to go there. That's kind of pessimistic way to start. But we're going to look at some practical things about resolutions of any kind, and then we're actually going to look at the one time that the word is used in the New Testament and see what that was all about. But kind of to cut to the chase, what we're going to end up with and where we're going to end up at is to get to where you want to be, the key is to take the next step. Right? To get to where you want to be, the key is to take the next step. Now, I don't know where you fall on the resolutions. Apparently none of you, not many of you are excited about the concept. One of my favorite ones I heard was from David Letterman a few years ago. He said that he resolved to start buying his lottery tickets at a luckier store. So maybe you want to adopt that one as yours. And if you do, then, well, good luck to you, because you'll need it. Other kinds of resolutions, probably more common resolutions, lots of folks, you know, resolve to spend more time with their family, maybe less time at work. Maybe you made a resolution like that. Some people may resolve to get out of debt or maybe to, you know, to quit some bad habit, you know, to quit smoking or drinking or cheering for Purdue, you know, or something, you know, other bad habits that people could have. All kinds of different resolutions. Perhaps one of the most common resolutions has to do with the idea of eating less and exercising more. Again, maybe you made a resolution along those lines. And if you did, I've got good news for you. According to Jay Leno, he noted that statistically speaking, there are now more Americans that are overweight than average weight. So being overweight is now average. So if you were, if that was your goal, then congratulations. You've hit your resolution or something like that. But maybe you found that not all resolutions are quite that easy to keep, that you've had trouble keeping up with your resolutions. And I found that maybe you're like me, maybe you were just doing it wrong. I actually saw a study where the expert said that the reason most people fail at their resolutions is because they don't do it right. And this is what the study said. Are you ready for this groundbreaking conclusion? All right. In order to make a good resolution, the experts say the key to making a good resolution is simply to make resolutions that you can keep. Well, if that's all there is to it, then, hey, why didn't you just say so in the first place? I mean, think about this. You know, I got to thinking about it. It's like, well, maybe they're onto something, right? So here's some resolutions I can keep. This year, I resolved to gain 15 pounds, right? I can do that, right? I resolved to eat a double cheeseburger and a milkshake at least 3 times a week. That I can do. All right. I resolved to eat pizza twice a week, at least one of them being the buffet at Chicago's. All right. And now if you're clever, you see how those last two work toward my goal of the first one. See, that's smart, right? Because I can do that. You know, regarding the family, I resolved to watch more TV, spend less time with the kids. You know, financially, I resolved to spend more than I have. See, those things I can do. Those are easy. Maybe that's not what the experts had in mind after all. Perhaps what they meant was for us to set realistic goals or attainable goals. In other words, don't commit to running an hour or exercising an hour every day, maybe just 5 or 10 minutes. Don't commit to reading the whole Bible or reading for an hour. Just commit to 5 or 10 minutes, a goal, a realistic goal that we can keep. Instead of resolving never to eat another cheeseburger or never have a slice of pizza again, all things in moderation. Perhaps that's what they meant. Well, we'll kind of back up a little bit. What is it that we mean, if we're going to talk about resolutions and resolving things, what does it mean to make a resolution? What does the word resolve even mean? Well, I looked it up in the dictionary. The dictionary says to resolve something means to decide firmly on a course of action. To decide firmly on a course of action. A resolution is more than a simple half-hearted decision. It's more than a, hey, let's give this a shot, all right, and see if it works. It's more of a detailed, firm decision that calls to mind a well-thought-out commitment. When I think of a resolution or resolve, I think of our founders' words in the Declaration of Independence when they pledged, they said they mutually pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. Right, that's a resolution. That's got some gravitas to it. That's got some meat to it. That's a commitment that's not taken lightly. Those are serious sounding words, words of determination. That's what resolve is. There's no going back. They'd made up their mind and counted to three, you know, so to speak. That's what a resolve or a resolution calls to mind. And things like that shouldn't be entered into lightly. Perhaps that's why in the whole English New Testament, the word resolve or resolution only happens one time. And we're going to look at that here just in a little bit. This morning we're going to look at some practical things that kind of go along, practical advice when making resolutions, any kind of resolution that can fit in any aspect of your life, physically, relationally, emotionally, spiritually. And then we're going to look at that one time that the word resolve or resolved is used in our English New Testaments. It was spoken by a man named Paul, and he kind of told us what his resolution was. And if you're a Christian, I'm going to be so bold as to challenge you to adopt his resolution as your resolution for not just this year, but for the rest of your life. If you're not a Christian, if you're just here checking things out, maybe one of your resolutions was to get back in church, and this is your first time here, or the first time in a long time, or maybe you just resolved to get your wife or your parents off your back, and you're here. We're glad that you're here, no matter what it is. And if that's the case, when we get to that spiritual part, you can kind of skip that and just hang on to the practical parts. But we're going to look this morning kind of three keys to a New Year's resolution, or to any resolution, really, any kind of a key, a decision that we might make. And the first thing, if you're taking notes there, is that anytime you're making a resolution, it's essential to have the right goal. All right? Again, this is for any aspect of your life. Physically, you know, if you've been a couch potato for the last several years, perhaps the right goal is not to win the Boston Marathon, right? Perhaps the right goal would be to, you know, finish a 5K run or walk, right? Set your goals realistically. You got to have the right goal. You know, relationally, maybe the goal shouldn't be to find a husband or a wife, particularly if you're already married, right? Not a good goal. But even if you're single, maybe that's not the right goal. Maybe the goal is not to become married, but to become the person, the kind of person that would attract the kind of husband or wife that you would be looking to find. Maybe the goal, again, shouldn't be to lose weight, but to make healthier choices, both in your eating and exercise, because everyone knows there's unhealthy ways that you could lose weight. So it's important when you're setting a resolution or making a goal, it's important to have the right goal in mind. So if that's the case, what would the right goal spiritually be? Now, most of us, when we're talking about, you know, spiritual goals or improving our lives in that way, or what, you know, we think God thinks of us and trying to improve that or whatever, most of it, if you think back of all the goals or the things that you've said over your life, maybe in New Year's resolutions or just at various times, most of what we come up with boils down to this: try harder to do better. How many have made goals like that before in your spiritual life? I'm going to try harder to do better. All right? Many of us have made those kinds of goals, and how did that work out for you? Not so good, if you're like me. Might work for an hour or a week or a month if you're really good at it, but that's not the proper spiritual goal. What we're going to find, according to this guy named Paul, that spiritually speaking, the goal is knowing Christ, not trying harder to do better. The goal is knowing Christ, not trying harder to do better. Paul is a guy that later he wrote, I know the good I ought to do, but I don't do it. I know what I should do, I don't. I know what I shouldn't do, but I do. Most of us can identify with that kind of thinking. Most of us have tried harder to do better, and it hasn't worked out so well for us. And so Paul is going to tell us that there's a whole different way to look at it. There's a whole different direction to go. It's not a matter of trying harder to do better, but rather it's trying, the goal should be knowing Christ and getting to know him better. Take a look at how he said it in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 2. He writes this: For I resolved, and there's our word again, for I resolved, in other words, I decided firmly, for I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Paul says, I resolved, here was my resolution, I resolved to know nothing except Jesus Christ. Now, this is not a Sergeant Schultz-like, I know nothing, right? Any Hogan's fans, Hogan's Heroes fans out there, I got to see some just over the last week. You know, TV Land's a wonderful thing. It's not like that. It's not. He's not saying that he's ignorant. In fact, Paul was a very well-educated man. On the contrary, Paul is saying, I've got all this stuff. I know all these things, But I'm resolving, I'm committing that the most important thing is to know Christ better, to get to know Him more and more, to spend my life concentrating entirely on Jesus and getting to know Him better. Because Paul had discovered that if he wanted to do better, the key was not to try harder. The key was getting to know Christ and becoming to know Him more and more and more. And the closer we come to Christ, then the other things in our life that we were trying so hard to do, we will find fall into place. And so Paul says that spiritually speaking, the goal is knowing Christ, not trying harder to do better. He further explained his thinking in another letter that he wrote to the Christians in the city of Philippi. After he listed kind of all his human qualifications, all the things that would be on his resume, and he had lots of those kinds of things that would make him seem kind of good and important to people. After he listed all those, he writes this, starting with verse 8 in Philippians chapter 3. He says, I consider everything a loss, all that stuff, I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them rubbish that I may gain Christ and be found in Him. He goes on, I want to know Christ and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of sharing in His sufferings, becoming like Him in His death, so somehow to attain to the resurrection from the dead. Paul says that spiritually speaking, our goal, if we're a follower of Christ, is not trying harder to do better. Our goal should be to get to know Christ more and more, to get to know His life and His death and His resurrection, to get to know His grace and His love and His righteousness. The more we get to know Him and the more we learn about Him, then the more we want to be like Him, and our life begins to change. Not because we've tried harder, but because we're becoming more and more like Christ. Paul says that getting to know Christ better is the goal. So when you're setting a resolution, it's very important to have the right goal. And Paul says, as a Christian, the goal is not to try harder to do better. Look at how he says it. He says, I consider them rubbish, all these things that I would have counted, that I may gain Christ and be found in Him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ. Paul says it's not about following the law. It's not about trying harder to do all those things. Yeah, I know those things I'm supposed to do, but it's not about trying harder, because that's not where true righteousness, that's not where true right standing with God comes from. The true right standing with God comes from our relationship with Christ. And so Paul would say that is the most important thing. I resolve to know nothing. I resolve to do nothing except try to grow my relationship with Christ, to know Him better and better. And that kind of leads us to the second point there. It's important to make to have the right goal, but it's also important to realize that none of us are there yet. None of us are there yet. And this, again, is in all aspects of your life. And even if you're not a resolution maker, there's never been a New Year's Day or a New Year's Eve that you've thought, and somebody came up to you and said, hey, you got any resolutions for this year? And you say, nope, perfect, just the way I am. Physically, perfect. Couldn't change anything. Mentally, emotionally, relationally, spiritually, I'm good. I've made it, right? That never happens. No one has ever said that in the history of the world. Nobody has ever come to New Year's Day and said that. The reality is none of us are there yet, whether it's physically or emotionally, mentally, certainly not spiritually. If our goal as Christians is to know Christ more and more, the reality is that none of us are there yet. Some of us may be further along. We've been on the path a little bit longer, but it's just that, is a path of growth. And so all of us are at different spaces on that path, but none of us have arrived. None of us are there yet. You would think if anybody could have said that, it would have been a guy like Paul. If you don't know much about Paul, he was a very religious kind of a guy. Jesus actually appeared to him and had a conversation, which that's kind of cool. And then after that, his life totally changed. And he, among other things, started most all the churches that you've ever heard about, and he wrote about half of the New Testament. So that's pretty cool. A guy like that, you would think, if anybody could say I've arrived spiritually, it would be a guy like Paul. But here's what he said as he continues on to in his letter to the Philippians. He says, not that I've already attained all this, not that I've attained this knowing Christ the way I want to and knowing all about His life and His death and His resurrection, not that I've obtained all this, not that I've arrived or that I've already been made perfect, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. Paul realized that even someone like him, he wasn't there yet. He had not arrived. And if someone like Paul acknowledges that he's not there spiritually yet, how much more all of us can acknowledge? You know, we're not there yet. We haven't arrived yet. The goal is to know Christ more and more. But the reality is none of us are there yet. Which leads us to our third fill in the blank there, if you're following along in your outline. That understand that reaching your goal requires concentrated effort. And again, this is in any area of your life where you're setting a goal that's worth attaining. Anytime you want to reach a goal, it requires concentrated effort. It won't happen by accident. No one ever got ready for a marathon by accident. No one ever just woke up in the morning and said, hey, I'm ready. I'm going to run the marathon. Right? Nobody ever lost 20 pounds by accident. Now, you can gain 20 pounds by accident, right? Many of us can testify to that, but you cannot lose 20 pounds by accident. You can't get out of debt by accident, right? You can get into debt by accident, can't get out of debt by accident. In the same way, you never become closer to Christ. You never grow in your walk with Christ by accident. It doesn't happen by accident. Look at some of the words that Paul says to describe his walk. He says he's resolved. We looked at that. He says he's straining forward. He presses on. It takes a concentrated effort because he realizes that roadblocks will come. Obstacles will come in your path. Maybe some of you, you know, made a resolution. You're going to run every morning. Or you're going to get up every morning and you're going to read your Bible. Well, there's obstacles that come up. If you're going to run every morning, what's the obstacle? Morning, right? It comes, right? And that's an obstacle, right? You're going to get up early to read, but morning, and that it's hard, all right? Paul would say you have to have a concentrated effort. You have to focus. You have to realize there are going to be obstacles. It's not going to be easy. If it were easy, you'd have already done it, right? If it was easy, you would have already been there. But it's not, and so you have to continue pressing on. Paul says he's straining forward. He's pressing on. He's resolved to do this. So we have to understand that reaching your goal requires concentrated effort, which kind of leads us to our bottom line, which I warned you about at the beginning. And that is this. To reach your goal, any goal, to reach your goal, the most important thing is to take the next step. It's to take the next step. As the quote earlier from Robert Louis Stevenson said, everyone who got where he is had to begin where he was. All right? That seems to make sense. Everyone who got where he is had to start where he was. And we are a church that exists to help people in a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Right? No matter if this is your first time here, or your first time in a long time, or you've been in church every day of your life and you've had a long life, it doesn't matter. Our goal as a church is to lead you into a growing relationship with Christ, because none of us are there yet. Each of us have steps that we can take to grow closer and closer to Christ. And so this year, as a church, as a congregation, we'll hopefully be taking steps as a congregation, growing closer and closer, trying to go to the next step in our relationship with God. For our congregation, this year we're going to be looking for more and more ways that we can become active in the community and be involved in the community. We're going to be continually looking for ways that we can make what we do here more attractive to those who aren't yet a part of our number. One of those things that we're doing is the time change that we told you about before. Next week, we're going to start that time change. Here's another warning for you, right? Our first service is going to start at 9:30, and our second service is going to start at 11. But why are we going to do that? Well, here's why. If you look around, you see there's some seats up front, okay? But there's not a lot of seats near the back. And particularly when our teens are here, it's fuller. And so statistically, we say that we know that most people who are going to visit with us for the first time, our friends and neighbors who aren't here yet, are going to come to a later service. And so we're hoping by backing the first service up to from 9 to 9:30 that some of you all will take the next step and say, you know, I could go to service at 9:30 and free my seat up for my neighbor, my friend, who is not, well, not your neighbor, because if he was coming, then you'd want to be here with him. But somebody else's neighbor, right? You could free up your seat for somebody else's neighbor, for somebody else's friend, so that they would be able to find a seat in our service. That's just one simple thing that we're going to do. So for some of you, the next step might just simply be next week I'm going to come to the 9:30 service and give meet some whole new people, because it's a whole different crowd there on a first service, and there's plenty of good seats. You can probably sit in the seat that you want to if you come to that first service. So there you go. So we're going to have that team change, time change. Another thing that we're doing kind of church-wide is there's some changes in our teen ministry. If you're a parent of the teens, you know about this already. But beginning next week, we're going to have our teens with us more regularly in our Sunday morning worship time. And we're going to do that for lots of different reasons, one of which is that they have lots of gifts and abilities that they can help and share with us. One is that some of you all have wisdom and knowledge and maturity that you can help them with. One of the things is that we just want our parents and teenagers to be able to hear the same message so that they could theoretically talk about God stuff together. Wouldn't that be cool if they could talk about that theoretically, right? I've heard that it has happened before. Parents and teens have talked about things like that. But plus, we want to give our teens a chance to take the next step in their walk as well. And some of them need to be serving. And they need to be realize that church is not all about what is done for them, but what they could do for others. And so they can be involved in our children's ministries, and they can be on stage, and they can be greeting, and they can be working and serving right alongside with the rest of us as we are all in this thing together. And so we're going to be looking to make kind of the next steps as a congregation. Along with that, I would challenge you to each one of you individually take the next step in your walk with Christ. Because to get to where you want to be, the key is that you have to take the next step. Well, what is the next step for you? I don't know, but it could be lots of different things. The next step for you could be to join a small group. We believe that one of the best ways to grow in your walk with Christ is to do so in the context of community, in the context of relationships. And so maybe you're not in a small group, and so you just can call some friends and say, hey, let's get together and talk about stuff. We're going to be, maybe you've noticed in your outline, there's a few discussion questions, and every week we're going to have that and from now on out. So maybe you could just get together and talk about it with your family or with some friends. Maybe you don't have any friends, and so you can call up Mike, and you can say, Mike, I don't have any friends. Can you put me, help me find a group of people. Maybe you're just kind of new and you're just checking things out and you have questions and you feel like your questions would be out of place, or you'd feel stupid asking them around people who know everything. But that's what you think. We have a class specifically for you starting in February on Wednesday evenings called Starting Point. And so if you've got questions that you want a safe place to ask around other people who are asking the same kinds of questions and kind of grow together as a group, Starting Point is the thing for you. And maybe that's your next step in on Wednesdays beginning in February. Perhaps your next step is to serve, right? If you got a bulletin today, open it up and find this yellow piece of paper. I'll know you've done that when I see them going like this. Oh, wait. Yellow, green, whatever color it is. Everybody got it? Hold it up. All right. Some of you had already made your grocery list on it, and that's okay. But what this is a list of opportunities for service, all right, around the church. Some of you have been attending for a long time, and we are thrilled that you do. But some of you, your next step needs to go from kind of the service side of the counter, the being served side of the counter. You need to take a step behind the counter and start serving yourself. And so there's all kinds of different opportunities. On one side of the page, you'll see opportunities in our children's ministry. Kristen would love to have you plugged in. We've got some great volunteers in our children's area, but we can never have too many. And as we grow as a church, we need more and more people who are willing to pour into young people. And maybe your commitment as you decide to give up your seat in this hour and come to the first hour, your commitment might be not just to come that 1 hour, but to stay for the second hour and volunteer in the children's ministry area. At the bottom of that page is our teen ministry area. There's lots of opportunities there, because though they're kind of revamping what happens on Sunday morning, they're also revamping what happens on Sunday evening. And so they need lots more adult helpers to help in that transition. And Kevin is looking for lots of folks to help in that, and lots of areas there. On the back side are areas that you could help in adult ministry. Lots of different areas. Highlight a couple. We're hoping to expand our welcome team out there in our greeters, so that when a new family comes, we don't just say hi to them, which is great, but there we have enough folks there at the door that you could actually walk them down to the nursery or walk them to the children's area and get to know them as you walk with them. And then they know a face and a name, and then you can come back. So we want lots of extra people in our greeting and our hosting areas, people in the parking lot to make people feel welcome. There's a thing that I forgot out there that I'm looking to form a Sunday morning prayer team so that at the end of each service we can make opportunity for people that just want people to pray for them. And if you'd be willing to do that, just to step out into the aisle and have folks come to you and that you could pray with them about whatever's on their heart, you could just make a little note to the side and say, prayer team. Lots of different things. For many of you, your next step here in your growth in your relationship with Christ is to quit coming and just being a spectator, but to come and to join up and to say, yes, I want to help serve. And so we'd really I challenge you to read over these areas, to sign that, and to put that in the offering plate or in one of the boxes at the back. You'll have a chance to do that next week, if you want to continue to pray about that. For some of you, your next step is to be more serious about reading the Bible on a daily basis. And if that's the case, lots of different options for you. Did you know in the New Testament there are 260 chapters? Did you also know that in the year there are 260 weekdays? Isn't that amazing? Monday through Friday, all year round, 260. So you could take the weekends off, just read one chapter a day, and you would have read through the whole New Testament in a year. That's pretty cool. Or the book of Proverbs has 31 chapters. Most months have close to that. And so you could read one chapter a day, and you could read through the book of Proverbs like 10 or 11 or 12 times throughout the year. That'd be cool. Or if none of those sound good to you, you could Google search Bible reading plan. And guess what? There's dozens and hundreds and thousands of options. But I would just encourage you, if that is the next step, and for many of you that would be a great next step, is to take more seriously your study and knowledge of the Word, I would encourage you to make that kind of a commitment as well. For some of you, the next step in your relationship with Christ and in your walk with Him might be to become a percentage giver. Right? To honor God with all of your finances, but to say up front, the certain percentage I'm going to give to God. And as we talked about a few weeks ago, the national average is 6%, and nobody wants to be below average, right? And so you'd at least want to start there and just kind of grow from there, or pick a percentage. Really, the number isn't as important as the commitment to honor God with your finances. All kinds of areas. Maybe you're kind of here for the first time or just checking things out again, and the next step for you is simply to say, I'm going to go back next week. And for you, that might be your next step. And if that's your next step, then great, and we hope to see you next week. For some of you, the next step might be to go on a mission trip, on a short-term trip. And in fact, we have a guest here today who has taken that next step in her own life, and I'm going to call Jana to the stage now, and she's going to talk to you a little bit about that. This is Jana Richardson. Would you make her feel welcome? Hi, Jana. Would you just tell us a little bit about yourself and the mission that you are a part of?
Good morning. I'm Jana Richardson. I'm from right here in Ellettsville, born and raised. Went to high school at Edgewood High School. I've been living and working in Tegucigalpa, Honduras for the past 3 years. I head back to Honduras for my fourth year in 11 days, so I'll head back pretty soon. But I work with a ministry in Honduras called His Eyes, and His Eyes has lots of different things that they do. We have a clinic, so we provide medical care, dentistry, optometry care for people in that local community. We also have a feeding program on site for kids. They come about 3 days a week. Some of those kids, that's the only meal that they're going to get that whole day. And so we provide that for them in a Bible lesson. We also work in different communities around Honduras, some up to 3 hours away, where we have a church plant and we'll do clothing distribution, food distribution. The biggest thing that we do that encompasses all of my time is hosting short-term groups. Some of you in the congregation have already been. If not, we want you to come. But I host the groups. I drive the truck. I translate. I take the groups around to visit the hospital, to do all the stuff I just said, do the clothing distribution, house visits, to pray with the family and give them rice and all that good fun stuff.
Right. Well, Jana, I've been talking about the importance of taking the next step, and there was a time about 10 years ago that you took that next step. And so tell us about that. How did you even get involved in missions in the first place, and then why in the world Honduras?
Good question. I was 19 years old, and the Lord opened doors at that time for me to be able to go on my first missions trip ever, and it was to Honduras. And on that missions trip is where God just totally got a hold of my life and drastically and radically changed it and gave me this heart for missions. And I went back to Honduras on three more consecutive short-term trips. They couldn't get rid of me. And then I did an internship for 6 months, and that's where I felt like God was wanting me to take that next step and move down there and do that full-time. And so I moved down there full-time in October of 2011. In Honduras, just because God has given me a huge love for Honduras in my heart. I love the people. I love the language. And I love it.
What would you say is the most rewarding or the best part of what you do?
Definitely the Honduran people. They're so loving and welcoming and just receptive to me as a foreigner. But just walking down the street and the little kids or their moms around the clinic, they know my name. They call me Hanna in Spanish. So Hanna, Hanna. And just their hugs and their smiles. It's very rewarding, very fulfilling, knowing that I have these real friendships, real relationships with these people, and getting to see that God's love, we're one body of Christ, even across borders and across language barriers, and that's the most rewarding thing for me.
Well, Jana, you started your missions experience back when you were 19, and now here 10, 11 years later, you're still doing that. Now, a lot of people that are in that kind of a time period in their life, whether men or women, are thinking about getting married, starting a family. How have you navigated that in your own mind?
Carefully. The Honduran people like to ask me that all the time. Jana, you're getting old. When are you going to get married? But I would just encourage you, if you are single and you're, I can't be a missionary, that'll interfere with my plans of getting married. I promise you that if you do what God wants you to do, you will never regret doing that. There are days, we're all human, that I do desire to be a wife and a mother. But the Lord knows that those are my desires. But this right now is what He has me doing, and it is very fulfilling, and I do have great joy doing it because it is a blessing and a privilege for me that I get to live in Honduras and do what I'm doing. And if I had a husband and children, I may not be able to do it, certainly not quite as easily as I get to traveling by myself. But it is a blessing for me to do what I get to do. And if you're one of those people, I would just encourage you that don't be afraid. Do what the Lord is calling you to do, and you won't regret it for a second, and you will find great joy in what you're doing.
And Jana, when we talked earlier this week, you said something that really stood out to me that I wanted you to share with the folks. You talked about, yes, you're on the mission field in a foreign country in Honduras, but you talked about having many, many mission fields. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, mini, like miniature, because when I'm not with a group, what am I doing? Well, I'm living life in Honduras. I'm going to the grocery store. I'm going to the bank. I'm buying my fruit from the stand around the corner. And so I've noticed that God has given me this crazy ability to speak Spanish and also some pretty cool interpersonal skills. The people in Honduras really tend to like me. I don't know. They like talking to me. So I have these relationships with these people. I go to the grocery store, the bagger, I know their name, and they know my name. My boss calls me the mayor. He jokingly says, oh, Jana's the mayor of the grocery store or whatever, because they all know my name. But that's because they're seeing Jesus through me, in me, and I have these real relationships, these real friendships that I'm sharing the love of Christ with them without words, just by living life with them. And that's a huge blessing to me, and it's just really fun to get to do that.
When you talked about that, it made me think, you know, that's something that could be done in other places besides Honduras, say like Bloomington or Ellettsville, right? Because we all go to the grocery store and we all have those kinds of things. So just see your life as a mission, that's a great encouragement. If you could tell, just as you wrap up, if you could tell our folks one thing, whether it's about God or about missions, what would you tell them?
If it has to be just one thing, I would definitely tell you that missions, going on a trip, is so important. You got to do it. Guys, you got to do it. If you think you're too old or you're too young or you don't have the money, listen, God will bring in the money, no problem. And missions isn't just, you might have an idea in your mind that it's just camping in a tent with no running water, eating pasty rice for a week on the sands of Africa. That's not it. There's so many different kinds of opportunities in Honduras, in all kinds of countries. You can find a missions trip that'll be good for you and comfortable for you, but I encourage you, get on a trip. 7 days out of your life is nothing, but it will be so important, and God will just explode your worldview, and you'll get to see your brothers and sisters in Christ in another country and how they worship. And I could talk for days about it, but I love it, and it's worth it. And you guys, if you're scared or that's not for me, just think about it. Pray it. It is for you. One mission trip. It's for you, I promise, and you won't regret it.
All right. Thanks, Janet. Would you all give her a hand? One thing I really wish is that she was a little more passionate about what she does, right? But that's why I was so thrilled to have her in front of you all, because that's the reality. I've been on trips before, and that's just true. Your life, 7 days, 10 days out of your life, it seems insignificant, but the things that you'll learn about God and that He might show you about you are just incredible, and it is a life-changing decision. So for some of you, that next step in your walk would be to take a short-term trip, and we're trying to make it as easy as possible for you this year. In fact, we've set kind of a goal that's a little bit crazy. We've set a goal of 30 from our church to go on a short-term trip. It's probably about twice as many as we've ever had before to go in any 1 year. And so it's kind of a bold goal, but we think it's reachable. And to make that easy, we've kind of got trips that we can tell you about in the spring, in the summer, and in the fall. There'll be some information about these in next week's bulletin, but coming up in March, Jim Gray, some of you know him, that used to be a part of our congregation, is taking a trip down to Haiti to the Haiti Medical Ministry, and they're going March. That's when they're going. In July, the trip that I've been a part of for several years to Poland to do a basketball camp for teenagers from all over Eastern Europe will be happening. In November, Keith Hansen from our church is going to be leading a team down to Guatemala to work with the Deeds, who were here several weeks ago giving their report. And I know that Jana will be more than happy to talk with any of you and to get on her mailing list about all the different options probably at any time during the year, because she's hosting groups all throughout the year down in Honduras. And so don't let schedule be an issue, because there's things all throughout the year where you could be a part of that. So I would just encourage you to pray about that, to see if God is nudging you toward that. And I would encourage all of you at least once in your life to be a part of a trip. It will definitely change your life. And that's really the bottom line again this morning, is that to reach your goal, any goal, no matter what it is, the most important thing is to take the next step. To take the next step. You may not see the whole staircase, as the quote said before, but just to take that first step. Because anyone who got where he is had to start where he was. And so we as a church want to encourage people to grow in their relationship with Christ, to take that next step. So if that next step for you is to get more serious about the Bible, then commit to a reading plan today. If your next step is to financially be a percentage giver, then commit to that and start that today. If your next step is to join a small group, call some friends, call Mike today and get that started. If your next step is to serve, then I challenge you to look over this list. And if you already know where God's prompting you to serve, fill that out and put it in the offering plate today. And again, we'll give you that chance again next week. Or maybe you feel God nudging you toward the mission field and you need to pray about that. I would just encourage you, whatever your next step is, to be willing to take that step. Because the reality is that none of us are there yet. We all want to grow, and our goal as a church is to encourage people to grow in their next steps, their next step in their walk with Christ, to get to know Him better and better. I don't know what your next step is, but you do. My challenge to you this morning is take that next step.